My name is Howie Kirschenbaum, and for a number of years I was chair of the Department of Counseling and Human Development at the University of Rochester's Warner School of Education. Now I'm a professor emeritus. And for many years I have studied the life and work of Carl Rogers and written edited a number of books on his life and work, the most recent one being The Life and Work of Carl Rogers, published in 2007. I'd like to tell a story which I'll call Rogers and Skinner's Second Debate. And this story took place in 1962. Many people are familiar with the 1956 debate between Carl Rogers and B.F. Skinner, and that debate took place at the American Psychological Association and was titled Some Issues Concerning the Control of Human Behavior. And it was a widely published and republished dialogue between the two, really a series of successive short speeches in which they explored some issues of concern to the behavioral sciences, particularly regarding the use of psychology to influence and control human behavior. Much less widely known was a dialogue that they had in 1962 in Wisconsin, which consisted of several hours of conversation and questions from the audience and exchanges between the two of them. And there are two interesting stories related to this second meeting that I'd like to tell here. One is how it came about. It seems that Skinner was invited to receive an honorary degree at Ripon College in Wisconsin, and when some students at the University of Minnesota heard that Skinner was going to be in their area, this is the University of Minnesota in Duluth, they decided to invite Rogers to come up and engage in a dialogue of 2 days' length with Dr. Skinner. Well, Rogers wasn't particularly interested in doing that, but thought, well, it was unlikely that Skinner was going to accept anyway, having to come all the way from Harvard to do that. So Rogers accepted, and then later found out Skinner, of course, had already accepted the invitation, and so he was obliged to follow through. So the meeting took place on June 11th and 12th, 1962, and I think it got off to a very amusing beginning when the two protagonists had been told that they wouldn't be making any speeches, that the goal was to have a real dialogue. Nevertheless, Rogers, who was asked to go first, launched into a 15-minute speech summarizing the issues that separated the two of them and the issues that he thought were important to the humanist movement in psychology and philosophy and religion and politics. So when Skinner got up to speak, he said, "Thank you very much, Dr. Gladstein," who was the moderator. And he said, "I always make the same mistake. When debating with Carl Rogers, I always assume that he'll make no effort to influence the audience," which point the audience began laughing. "And then I have to follow him and speak as I'm speaking now to a group of people who are very far from free to accept my views." Again, the audience laughed. And Skinner continued saying, "In fact, I was just reminded of a story that I once heard about Carl Rogers, and I'll tell it now, hoping to confirm or have him deny it. I suppose it is apocryphal, at least I'm sure it's grown in its dimensions. The story as I heard it is as follows. Carl Rogers was never much of a duck hunter, but he was persuaded on one occasion to go duck hunting. He and some friends went into a blind and sat on a cold, dreary early dawn, and no ducks arrived until the very end of the time when shooting was possible. Finally, one lone duck came in, and his friends allowed him to shoot, and he did. At the same time, along the shore, a few hundred yards away, another man shot at the same duck. The duck fell. Plop. Dr. Rogers got out of the blind and started toward the duck. The other man got out of his blind and started toward the same duck. They arrived at the same moment. Dr. Rogers turned to him and said, "You feel that this is your duck?" At that point, the audience just broke into uproarious laughter, and Skinner concluded, "The reason I was reminded of that story was that at the end of it, Dr. Rogers brought the duck home. I shall do my best to prevent a similar occurrence." And again, the audience laughed appreciatively. Well, that set the tone for much of the exchange. Rogers and Skinner were always friendly, at least cordial with one another. But they really had a great deal of respect for one another, although significant differences in many of their views. Well, Rogers, of course, had to reply to the duck hunting story, which actually had some basis in truth. In fact, he later wondered that it was a story that he thought only his own family knew, and didn't know where Skinner could possibly have picked that up, but he had to respond to it. So when it became his turn, he explained to the audience that he actually had been duck hunting with his brother in Wyoming, and he had shot a duck which had fallen, and the duck did wade out into the shallow lake, only to find another duck hunter who also claimed the bird as his. And Rogers said the only difference was how the story ended. He said, "I'm sure I don't know how word of that got out to Harvard, but there's a great deal of truth in the story, except for the punchline. Instead of saying, 'You feel that you shot the duck,' we resorted instead to a procedure very highly regarded in scientific circles. We flipped a coin, and that proved that I had shot the duck." Again, the audience broke into great laughter, as they did the next morning when Skinner used his opening remarks to give a long speech with an emphatic ending, and this time it was Rogers' turn to comment, "Dr. Skinner told me he got up early this morning. I didn't know he got up that early." And they continued with really several hours of a dialogue that took the form of brief remarks and conversation with one another and responses to questions from the audience. It was a very meaningful exchange that covered many major issues in psychology and the behavioral sciences in particular. And on one occasion, it's the second part of the story I'll relate, on one occasion, Rogers reminded Skinner of an article that Skinner had written in the American Psychologist, in which Skinner talked about his own process of creativity. And Rogers wanted to use this article to explain to Skinner how he believed the creative process was more than the result of prior reinforcements, but something that had a spontaneity and an individual creativity that couldn't be entirely explained away by prior reinforcement. And Rogers pointed out, for example, that as I remember that article, Dr. Skinner there gives a very vivid picture of the scientific life as process. And this is exactly the kind of thing which I've been trying to describe as the good life from any angle, that far from knowing where he was going to come out, he had to live in process and had to let learnings emerge as they emerged, and they shaped his behavior and so on. In other words, it was a reciprocal process, that the creative process led to unexpected results, and those results in turn shaped behavior, but then the individual was still an individual who responds on the basis of his own or her own individuality and creativity, and not as a totality of all prior reinforcements. And he was saying this had great implication, because if we believed in this process, we would recognize that the goal of the behavioral scientist wasn't to predict and control outcomes, but to facilitate the ongoing development of the person. And so Rogers concluded by saying that now this somehow being reminded of your article makes me feel a great deal better about Dr. Skinner. The audience laughed. To realize that in his own life he values that emerging, unpredictable process. And I guess that's what I've been trying to say about the kind of culture I would want to design and the kind of outcomes I see in therapy when therapy is successful. That the individual becomes an ongoing process of life in which the outcome is not set. There are not static goals. To which Skinner replied, "This may be an historic moment. I think I have been changed by that argument." And he went on to explain why and concluded by saying, "I'm now beginning to understand what you mean by becoming," to which the audience applauded greatly, feeling privileged to have be present when these two great men in the field of psychology really did engage in a dialogue.